In September 1922, Robert Oppenheimer enrolled at Harvard. Although the university awarded him a fellowship, he didn't accept it, because I could get along well without the money. In lieu of the scholarship, Harvard gave him a volume of Galileo's early writings. He was assigned a single room in Standish Hall, a freshman dormitory facing the Charles River. At 19, Robert was an oddly handsome young man. Every feature of his body was of an extreme. His fine, pale skin was drawn taut across high cheekbones. His eyes were the brightest pale blue, but his eyebrows were glossy black. He wore his coarse, kinky black hair long on top but short at the sides, so he seemed even taller than his lanky 5'10" frame. He weighed so little, never more than 130 pounds, that he gave an impression of flimsiness. His straight Roman nose, thin lips, and large, almost pointed ears accentuated an image of exaggerated delicacy. He spoke in fully grammatical sentences with the kind of ornate European politeness his mother had taught him. But as he talked, his long, thin hands made his gestures seem somehow contorted. His appearance was mesmerizing and slightly bizarre. His behavior in Cambridge over the next 3 years did nothing to soften the impression his appearance gave of a studious, socially inept, and immature young man. As surely as New Mexico had opened up Robert's personality, Cambridge drove him back to his former introversion. At Harvard, his intellect thrived, but his social development floundered, or so it seemed to those who knew him. Harvard was an intellectual bazaar filled with delights for the mind, but it offered Robert none of the careful guidance and devoted nurturing of his ethical culture experience. He was on his own, and so he retreated into the security his powerful intellect assured. He seemed incapable of not flaunting his eccentricities. His diet often consisted of little more than chocolate, beer, and artichokes. Lunch was often just a black and tan, a piece of toast slathered with peanut butter and topped with chocolate syrup. Most of his classmates thought him diffident. Fortunately, both Francis Ferguson and Paul Horgan were also at Harvard that year, so he had at least two soulmates. But he made very few new friends. One was Jeffries Wyman, a Boston Brahmin who was beginning graduate studies in biology. He, Robert, found social adjustment very difficult, Wyman recalled, and I think he was often very unhappy. I suppose he was lonely and felt he didn't fit in well. We were good friends, and he had some other friends, but there was something that he lacked, because our contacts were largely, I should say wholly, on an intellectual basis. Introverted and intellectual, Robert was already reading such dark-spirited writers as Chekhov and Catherine Mansfield. His favorite Shakespearean character was Hamlet. Horgan recalled years later that Robert had bouts of melancholy, deep, deep depressions as a youngster. He would seem to be incommunicado emotionally for a day or two at a time. That happened while I was staying with him once or twice, and I was very distressed, had no idea what was causing it. Sometimes Robert's flair for the intellectual went beyond the merely ostentatious. Wyman recalled a hot spring day when Oppenheimer walked into his room and said, "What intolerable heat! I have been spending all afternoon lying on my bed reading Jean's Dynamical Theory of Gases. What else can one do in weather like this?" 40 years later, Oppenheimer still had in his possession a weathered and salt-encrusted copy of James Hopwood Jean's book, Electricity and Magnetism. In the spring of Robert's freshman year, he formed a friendship with Frederick Bernheim, a pre-med student who had graduated from the Ethical Culture School a year after him. They shared an interest in science, and with Ferguson about to leave for England on a Rhodes scholarship, Robert soon anointed Bernheim as his new best friend. Unlike most college-age men, who tend to have many acquaintances and few deep friendships, Robert's friendships were few and intense. In September 1923, at the beginning of their sophomore year, he and Bernheim decided to share adjacent rooms in an old house at 60 Mount Auburn Street, close to the offices of the Harvard Crimson. Robert decorated his room with an oriental rug, oil paintings, and etchings he brought from home, and insisted on making tea from a charcoal-fired Russian samovar. Bernheim was more amused than annoyed by his friend's eccentricities. He wasn't a comfortable person to be around, in a way, because he always gave the impression that he was thinking very deeply about things. When we roomed together, he would spend evenings locked in his room, trying to do something with Planck's constant or something like that. I had visions of him suddenly bursting forth as a great physicist, and here I was, just trying to get through Harvard. Bernheim thought Robert was something of a hypochondriac. He went to bed with an electric pad every night, and one day it started to smoke. Robert woke up and ran to the bathroom with the burning pad. He then went back to sleep, unaware that the pad was still burning. Bernheim recalled having to put the thing out before it burned the house down. Living with Robert was always a little bit of a strain, Bernheim noted, because you had to more or less adjust to his standards or moods. He was really the dominant one. Difficult or not, Bernheim roomed with Robert for their two remaining years at Harvard and credited him with inspiring his later career in medical research. Only one other Harvard student dropped by their Mount Auburn Street quarters with any regularity. William Clouser Boyd had met Robert in chemistry class one day and took an instant liking to him. "We had lots of interests in common aside from science," he recalled. They both tried to write poetry, sometimes in French, and short stories imitative of Chekhov. Robert always called him Clouser, purposely misspelling his middle name. Clouser often joined Robert and Fred Bernheim on occasional weekend expeditions to Cape Ann, an hour's drive northeast of Boston. Robert didn't yet know how to drive, so the boys would go in Bernheim's Willie's Overland and spent the night at an inn in Folly Cove outside of Gloucester, where the food was particularly good. Boyd would finish Harvard in 3 years, and, like Robert, he worked hard to do it. But while Robert obviously spent many long hours in his room studying, Boyd remembers that he was pretty careful not to let you catch him at it. He thought Robert could run circles around him intellectually. He had a very quick mind. For instance, when someone would propose a problem, he would give two or three wrong answers, followed by the right one, before I could think of a single answer. The one thing Boyd and Oppenheimer did not have in common was music. "I was very fond of music," Boyd recalled. "But once a year he would go to an opera, with me and Bernheim usually, and he'd leave after the first act. He just couldn't take any more." Herbert Smith had also noticed this peculiarity and once said to Robert, "You're the only physicist I've ever known who wasn't also musical."